I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roaming Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, roamingoz.com.au. All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we start off in Trangie.
Right.
At the Truck and Tractor Fest. And I will be chatting with a young gentleman named Jason. Now, Jason drives a massive fuel tanker.
I know, okay? It's huge.
It is absolutely awesome. He's a driver for Inland Petroleum, and this particular rig he drives weighs 90 ton.
Wow, impressive.
And I asked him about it. I said, what's it like driving? He said, just like a big gong car, like a big station wagon. Well, I've got to tell you, listeners, jumping inside it, anything but a station wagon. The dash panel, the instrumentation in this rig, looks like something from the space shuttle.
Right, okay.
They can tell absolutely everything about this rig, even to the weight of individual axles. It's all there on computers. So it's a very interesting chat with young Jason. And he also tells us some things that maybe the caravanners think they're doing right, but could in fact be doing very dangerous in order to try and assist truck drivers. So make sure you listen to that one. Now, straight after Trangie, Lynn, where are we?
We're in Derby, which is in Tasmania, and you're chatting to Joe.
Now, Joe's a young bicycle rider. And I don't mean a guy who just pedals his bicycle around the street.
No,
Joe likes to take it out on these bike trails. And
mountain bike trails.
And these trails are pretty awesome, okay? They get some riders from all over the world, apparently. So they can be as easy as you like, or they can be like a double black diamond run, which apparently will scare the bejesus out of you unless you know what you're doing. And now straight after Joe.
You're going to be chatting to John. Now, he's a volunteer at Ledgerwood.
Right.
And Ledgerwood actually was made famous. They've made memorial trees and sculpted them into World War I soldiers. So that's quite interesting. There's 25 statues depicting the fallen men and women and they were planted back in 1918.
And thank you so much to John for telling us all about those trees.
That's
and also
correct.
A little bit about the town of Ledgerwood. And straight after that, Lynn, where are we again?
We're in Hill End.
Hill End.
And we're visiting History Hill and chatting to Malcolm Drinkwater.
Now, Malcolm apparently has the largest private collection of memorabilia, history, all relating to people that were living in Hill End. Right back in the day. Now, of course, Malcolm had so much to tell us, we couldn't fit it into one program.
No.
So this is part one of Malcolm Drinkwater, and we'll be back with the second part of his interview next week. Now, apart from all these fabulous interviews, Lynn, we also have a great selection of music
as requested
by the people we interview. So, Lynn, what do you think?
On with the show.
Hello, listeners. This is Phil C, and the program you've just joined us with is Roaming Oz. And today we're in Trangie at the Truck and Tractor Show, and I'm chatting with Jason Stanley. Now, he's a mechanic slash driver for Inland Petroleum. How are you going today, Jason?
Going well. Starting to dry out a bit now the rain's eased up.
Well, that's a fabulous thing, although I understand a lot of the people out here need the rain.
They do, yeah.
They do. It's been a bit dry, but you've had quite a bit of rain leading up to this truck festival.
We were a bit worried
it wasn't going to go
ahead. Yes.
Gladly, it has gone ahead. And unfortunately for you, you're now on the radio with me. And you're going to be talking to me all about this A-double 30-metre 90-tonne truck. Now, this thing carries fuel.
Fuel, yes.
Okay. Yep. So tell us a few things about the truck. First of all, You've driven it a few times, 90 ton. What does it feel like?
It's just like driving a car.
Really?
Yeah.
You're serious?
It's literally just driving a car.
Big car, big station
wagon.
Big,
yeah.
Wow. Okay. So is there anything special that you need? Obviously, it's 90 ton. It's 30 metres long. So obviously, it's not quite like driving a car.
No, definitely.
You need a bit more room when you're turning and so on and so forth.
Yep.
But what about when you're out in the open road and you're climbing up and down hills? I mean, how many gears has this thing got?
It's 18 speed.
So
you've got to know when to pick them.
Okay. You're making it sound easy, Jason, but it's not really easy, is it?
No, it's not.
There's a bit more to it. There's a bit more to it. I mean, I do really, really respect the guys that drive these things because it's not I mean, I have a heavy rigid license, and there's no way would I want to just jump in that and say,
nah.
Oh, it's just a bigger car than the last one.
Definitely can't take it for granted, no. That's for sure.
So, tell us about the truck. Like, it's a sophisticated vehicle, isn't it?
So the truck itself's a 610 Kenworth.
Right.
So we've got three or four of them now in the fleet.
Yep.
This one here is set up specifically for towing this rig.
Okay.
So it's got bigger diff gears for the extra weight, so there's not much load on the truck itself.
Okay.
Uphills the breeze with the ratio that's been set with it. Mm-hmm. So, and it, cruises along quite well along the highway.
So 90 tonne, it doesn't deter it at all. It just sees a hill and says, see you later, alligator.
Pick the right gear and it just pulls.
So how do you know what gear to pick? Obviously,
based on your revs.
Okay.
Obviously, if you're empty, you're going to be in a high gear.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much just don't rush it.
So is it the sort of gearbox that if you don't know what you do, you have to double shuffle in these guys? Is it the sort of thing that's...
So it depends what your driving preference is. Like, only time I use the clutch is to take off. Some guys do double clutch, some guys don't. So, it's just a matter about picking your revs and making sure you're in the right gear.
So you don't use the clutch at all except to move the truck?
Except to take off.
And the rest of it, you're just looking at the tacho, listening to the motor and changing through the gears?
Yep. That's
fabulous.
It.
Now, that's an art in itself.
It is. Don't worry. If someone says they don't grind a gear, they're lying. And we still do.
You've grinded it. I won't tell your boss, because I understand that, Jason, is over $1 million, that truck.
It is. That set up there, yes, it is.
So what happens if you grind a few gears? Because you are the mechanic. Do you have to pull the thing apart and start fixing it?
No, we've, like, just of late, we've got a couple of the line haul trucks that we're... Third gear starting to wear out, so new gearbox and clutch goes in, and away we go again. Yeah, and so obviously everything wears out, but the guys are pretty good on it that drive it. So
they know what they're doing. Obviously, you know what you're doing. Do you prefer to drive it or do you prefer to fix it? You're a mechanic / driver. What's your preference?
It's good to have the variety, but mainly fixing them.
Yeah,
mainly fixing them.
But when you drive it, it's like, how often do you drive it? Once a week, once a month?
It depends.
Okay.
At the moment, we've had a few blokes away, so it could be during the week, could be on the weekends, but mainly it's probably every 2 or 3 weeks. I'll get in it for a weekend trip, the Newcastle or up to Erromanga.
Yes.
You know, up north into Queensland, so a couple of day trip, that one.
Right. So it's not like... Geez, I haven't driven this for 2 weeks. You just jump in it like it was yesterday?
Yeah.
Nothing to think
about?
Yeah,
muscle memory, just straight back into
just,
it.
Just happens automatically. Yeah. So as a driver of a huge rig, and 90 ton, 30 metres, it's a big unit.
It is.
Have you had any sort of experiences, because we do get a lot of listeners that do caravanning and camper motorhomes and so on and so forth, have you ever sort of been in a situation, where you think, what is this guy doing?
I have had a few. Probably one of the worst ones is just suddenly stopping and pulling off the side of the road.
Okay.
Instead of just maintaining the pace and waiting for a safe spot, they're literally seeing like an entrance to a property and just wheeled off. Like, you got to brake, especially with other cars coming the other way.
Okay.
It's been quite hairy.
Okay, so they think they're doing you a favour. They think, oh, this poor guy, he's time's money, I'm slowing him down. Oh, there's a spot, and they pull straight off.
Yeah.
And that's the worst thing they can do. One of the worst so far. Yep.
I have had another truck side swipe me, but just not watching what he was doing and pulled into overtaking lane a bit too early and clipped the front of me bull bar. So that was interesting. That was early in my driving career. But
So that was obviously not intentional? Or do you think he did that to give you a bit of a...
Well, he didn't pull over or call me up on the two-way, so it was probably a bit of 50-50.
So there's a bit of truck rivalry out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So.
Wow. And that's an extremely dangerous thing to do.
Very dangerous.
Especially if he clipped your bar, my goodness.
Yes.
Wow.
So luckily we're only going slow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, any funny incidences that you've seen? Do you ever get on the radio and say, hey, mate, what are you doing? Like,
I have, coming back through the Pilliga, I've had one fellow, he repetitively called up, no tail lights. okay. at all. So
on the caravan or the truck, or what was he doing?
So he was a B-double.
Okay.
His light lead wasn't even plugged in for his trailers.
Oh, wow.
So called up many times, ended up calling the cops, and they pulled him up as he was coming into a town.
Okay.
So, yeah, not cool.
So he sort of obviously didn't do that intentionally. Would he have picked up the truck that way, do you think? Because they do changeovers.
They do changeovers. I'm just lazy.
Oh, lazy?
Just lazy, yeah. He got told heaps of times plenty of opportunities to pull over in rest bays, but didn't do it.
And he would have heard you on the radio for sure.
Oh, yeah, because I deliberately had my high beam on.
Okay.
And he called me up, so he knew, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, wasn't ideal, especially at night time. You know, you need all the lights you got to let you know where you're at. So,
have you got any tips for a lot of our listeners? 90% of our listeners are people that drive caravans and motorhomes and so on and so forth. Any tips as a professional driver of a vehicle that weighs 90 ton? Anything that you might like to say to them? Obviously, we're not here to pick on people because I drive myself. But to just say, you know, like that one, for example, pulling straight over on the dirt.
Maybe
a lot of people are not aware of that.
They're not ideal.
A bad one. So what other things
probably
would you suggest?
If you've got a heavy vehicle coming up behind you,
you
know, either maintain your speed or, you know, pick it up a couple of Ks until there is an opportunity for a safe overtake. And then, you know, if you've got a two-way, call them up, let them know, and then if it's safe, let them round. But, yeah, don't slow down is the biggest thing. Don't slow down.
Okay.
Keep going your pace or just pick it up a little bit until they're around you, and then just let them on their way. Like, it's not going to slow them up for long, whether it be 5-10 Ks, but rather get around you safe and make sure you get to where you're going or everyone gets to where they're going.
Yep.
It's probably the biggest thing.
So what's an ideal speed? Because in a rig like that, you're restricted to 100 Ks?
No. So in a road train,
yes.
you're limited to 90.
Okay. So in that scenario, then you're limited to 90. So what would be an ideal speed for the guy in front of you? Because if you can only do 90 and he's doing 90, you're never going to get around the guy, are you?
No. Well, that's it. Like, same thing. Pick your safe speed if you're comfortable doing that. Like, we're going to get around you eventually. It's just a safe spot to do it. So.
Otherwise, maybe slow down a little bit then to allow you.
Yeah. Especially
but not just slam the brakes on, just slowly just...
But if you see them kind of overtake,
yeah.
like they're indicating they overtake, they're starting to come around, you back the speed off.
Yeah.
Get them around quicker.
Yes.
And then maintain, you know, go back to where you'll sit, lock on your speed and
fabulous.
Happy days.
Happy days indeed. Jason Stanley, thank you so much for your time today.
No worries
I'm
at
going
all.
To wind this up, listeners. Now, Jason, as I said, he's the mechanic/driver for Inland Petroleum, the major sponsor here at the Trengy Truck and Tractor Show. Drives a 30-metre, 90-tonne rig. Good luck to that, my friend. You can have that on your own. Going to wind this up now. What sort of Aussie song can I play for you?
Put a bit of Jimmy Barnes, Driving Wheels.
Driving Wheels. Good song selection because that's what you do. How many wheels are on that rig?
Oh, I don't want to know.
You don't want to know? Too many to count. All right, listeners, stick around for more Roman Oz straight after Jimmy Barnes' Driving Wheels.
He could close his eyes as he ships in overdrive. He's been up and down this road so many times. The man of his own, the searching just keeps it moving. Only the loud can tame the rebel in himself. It's the rhythm of the highway as it rolls on by. The city lights as it fades from sight. Drives the man behind the driving wheels.
G'day listeners, Phil C here. This is Roman Oz and I'm in the town of Derby in Tasmania and I'm at where they do all these fabulous bike trails. Now I'm chatting with a young chap, his name is Joe. How are you going today, Joe?
Yeah, good, thanks Phil.
Matey, what can you tell us about this place? First of all, the town of Derby, do you know much about it or no?
Yeah, look, it used to be a mining town because the industry here, they were mining tin a while ago.
Okay.
And look, they discovered it had really good soil or loam. Okay. Used for the trails. It's really sticky, so it's good for on the berms, on the hills.
Okay.
So it's been really booming lately because, you know, businesses opening up, people realising the potential.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fabulous. So how many trails do we have approximately, Joe, would you know?
I'd say around 50 to 80 trails around, especially here.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess they're for all levels of riders?
Yeah. Look, you've got trails ranging from, you know, nice, easy, pretty flat, and then you've got the full-on double black diamonds for the pros. There's something for everyone.
Okay, so do you consider yourself a double black pro, Joe?
Or? I'm more of like the intermediate going on the black diamond kind
okay,
of getting
cool.
there.
So tell us a bit about the intermediate runs, because this is obviously your area of expertise at the moment. So
yeah.
You graduated these double black diamond runs.
Yeah. So at the moment, I'm really enjoying a trail called Flicky Sticks. That's a blue trail.
Okay.
So it comes down from Black Stump, where you'll be dropped off on a shuttle.
Right.
And it's got a bit of climbing, it's got a bit of flow, it's got some good technical, a bit of everything, really.
Okay. So how long does the trail, like, last? What's it?
So that one there.
Is that a short trail, or is that, like...
Yeah, relatively short, about 20 minutes, I reckon.
20 minutes. And what? So it, you call it intermediate. So what makes it intermediate? Is it the terrain, or what makes it that?
Yeah, well, there are a few tree roots. I guess there's a bit of, a bit of a slope to it.
Yep.
Also, I think some of the turns are pretty sharp.
Right.
But really, you can walk around most of it. So yep. Even if you're a beginner, you'd yep. still have a great time.
Okay. Well, if you're a beginner, so there are easier tracks than that, though.
Definitely,
obviously.
Yeah.
So, what's the youngest? Would you think you get like little kids out here? Obviously,
yeah.
They don't need training wheels, but like, what do you think?
Yeah, look, I've seen lots of little kids out today.
Okay.
Especially around the lake.
Okay.
There are lots of great trails for families, and look, even some of the young ones, man, they go crazy. You see them flying off the jumps even. But I mean, like, yeah, all skill levels here. It's all accommodated. It's all very central as well.
Okay. But, so is it more sort of located at the families, or you do get some really serious riders out here?
You do get some serious guys, definitely. I mean, some people come from all around Australia.
Right.
I know there was a guy from Melbourne in yesterday, and he was, yep. Just doing all the crazy trails.
Okay.
But yeah, no, you get everyone up here, really.
Uh-huh. So what's a crazy trail? Tell us about that. That's obviously the double black.
Crazy trail. There's one called Trouty. And you'll probably see it. There's a massive big rock painted like a trout up on the hill.
Oh, yeah, we saw that driving
into
Derby.
Yeah, so that's renowned as one of the most insane, full-on, steep descent, lots of rocks, lots of sharp turns, basically vertical.
So what's the secret? Do you just go flat out, or are you meant to use brakes on any of this stuff, or
yeah.
What's the technique?
It's a bit of everything. You've got to kind of have that fearless, ready to go. Making decisions really quickly, picking your line.
Okay.
You got to have, good on your brakes and everything.
Uh-huh. So what about your bike? Tell us about your bike, because these are not bikes you'd sort of roam around the streets on, are they? To go and get the milk and bread from the local corner store.
Yeah, no. So, yeah, you got to have a good mountain bike to be up here.
Yep.
You can go with a hardtail or something, but I'm riding a dual suspension at the moment.
Right.
This is a Scott.
So what's the difference between a hardtail? Does that give you a sore backside, or what's the difference?
A bit, yeah. So hardtail, no suspension on the back.
Okay.
And then a dual suspension, yeah. Suspension on the front and the back.
So what makes the difference between a hardtail and dual suspension?
Well, dual suspension will give you a lot more cushioning, especially when you're rolling over rocks.
Okay.
And you're going to expect a lot of rocks up here, so you kind of just... set it to nice and squishy and you send it down, really.
Okay.
Yep.
So these guys that are riding double black runs, do they have a preference? Are they using like something like yours, dual suspension?
I think they would. They'd probably use a downhill bike, which is even more suspension and a bit more cushioning. And also the way it's built, it's kind of meant for more vertical.
Okay.
Higher gears as well, so they can pedal a lot faster downhills.
So this particular bike of yours, it's got a couple of cogs on the back, so that's obviously your gearing system. How many gears you got on this thing?
It's only got about 9 gears on it, uh-huh. So it's got enough to get from, the uphill and downhill.
Right.
They usually don't put a lot of gears on mountain bikes for that reason. You don't want to have too much weight on the back there.
Right. And what about fitness levels? Like, you look pretty fit, so does your mate here. Like, do you have to be really super fit to do this kind of stuff, or...?
Yeah, there are some good trails where you don't need to be super fit.
Okay.
But another thing that's really taken off recently are the e-bikes.
Ah.
And you can hire e-bikes here as well. So
in Derby.
I've seen, people who just want to give it a go having a great old time on these e-bikes. So
okay. They're
really popular right now.
So how do you think the e-bike, though, would cope with it? Because they're more like for lazy old seniors who just want to pedal down the road but can't quite make it up the hill.
Yeah, they've managed
to... What about the terrain for the e-bikes?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think some of the more technical trails might have a bit of a harder time.
Uh-huh.
But for most of it, with the motor in there, you're rocketing up these things with the same suspension,
okay. Same
kind of gears.
Right.
Yeah, you plough over most things.
Okay. So, Joe, how long have you been doing it? And what made you take it up, first of all? Because it sounds pretty dangerous on some of these double blacks, which you're not quite at. But
yeah. Obviously
that's your goal, right?
Getting there.
Yep.
Well, I've been riding probably for about, since I was very young,
mm-hmm.
for about 3 or 4. But then mountain biking, kind of riding around Hobart a bit. And then, coming up for holidays here,
uh-huh. Working
it out, because I've got a younger brother as well.
Right.
And we've both been, trying out different trails, seeing what works. But yeah, it's been a bit of a journey.
A journey? Is it a journey you think you're going to continue doing until you crack all these double black runs?
Oh, definitely, yeah. No, I'm never going to stop riding.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can do the same trail again and again, really. It's so much fun.
So I said crack there. Have you actually cracked anything? You broken any bones, fallen off, have you taken any skin off?
Not yet. Had a few grazes, but no, I'm very fortunate so far. Hope to keep it that way.
Okay. And for the double blacks, these real serious hardcore guys, did many of these guys get injured or no?
Yeah, look, you do get some injuries.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think someone last time I was here heard of an injury that happened on Trouty. So you got to be careful.
Yep.
Injuries do happen, but look, you can get a lot of protective gear and, you know, ride at your own level.
I suppose you've got to know your own capabilities.
Own capabilities, that's it.
For sure, for sure. Yeah. So with me, I think I'd rather go up there in an armoured tank or something.
Yeah, I don't know about a bicycle. The trails on that.
Yeah,
that'd be a side arc.
Maybe a four-wheeler or something and just...
That'd be great.
Amble down there in low range.
Yeah, just sending off all the jumps, getting some good airtime.
All righty, fabulous. Joe, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah, thank you, Phil. It's been great.
Mate, I'm going to play you a song now. You got a favourite Aussie band or Aussie singer?
Yeah, look, my favourite Aussie band's probably the Rubens.
Okay.
And my favourite song's Hoops.
Hoops?
Yeah, Hoops by the Rubens.
Sounds very appropriate.
Great Aussie track.
Do you do many hoops? I saw a guy riding in here before and he was on one wheel.
Yeah.
What was that all about? He was riding through on the back wheel.
Doing a few wheelies,
Doing a few wheelies?
Nah, great fun.
All righty. Well, we're going to be back with more Raymond Oz. Thank you so much for your time,
Joe. Yeah, thank you.
Good on you, mate. Bill will be back with more Raymond Oz listeners straight after the Rubens Hoops.
Things won't make it matter. Got good things, got you. Hoops and everything. Get back, never get back too soon. Are you lonely? Are you there when I'm not in the room? Are you only? Only a part of this when you choose. Is it real? Is it something that you cannot touch? Do you feel? Do you feel that you feel too much? Bloodstains won't make it matter. Got good things, got you. Hoops and everything. Get back, never get back too soon. Bloodstains make confusing patterns. They lead me to you. Hoops and everything. Get back, never get back too soon. Something crazy, something changing in the way you talk. You were lately you were trying to be the one on top. Come on down, come on and give it to me like you should. Gonna drown, I give up and get on with it, life is good. It matter, got good things, got you. Hoops and everything. Get back, never get back too soon. Get back, never get back too soon. Get back, never get back too soon. Get back, never get back. Get back, never get back.
Street Caravans have now moved to a brand new location. 11 Clayton Road, Heatherbrae is where you'll find them. Whether you're looking to sell, trade or upgrade, they'll look after you. Check out their range, Silver Valley, Hurricane, Paramount, Road Trip or their flagship Option RV. They won't be beaten on price, so get yourself a knockout deal today. They're open 6 days a week. Why not give them a call on 02-4987-5288 or check out their website, 7thstreetcaravans.com.au.
G'day listeners, Phil C here. This is Roman Oz and we're in the town of Ledgerwood in Tasmania and I'm chatting with John, one of the volunteers here at the Ledgerwood Memorial Park. How are you today, John?
Good, thank you.
Matey, yes. tell us what you can about Ledgerwood.
Well, it started in the early 1900s.
Right.
Just as a town, mainly as a sawmilling town. And
right.
Well, that sort of thing. A lot of sawmills about the place then. Uh-huh. And then it ended up, there's got milk factory here.
Right.
And that closed down in 2000.
Uh-huh.
And it got milk from all over the northeast. And
right.
Yeah.
Okay, so how old is the town?
About 1900, around about that area.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sometime in the 1900s. Yeah. And what about, it's only a small town, isn't it?
Yes.
So what's the population?
About 150.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is pretty small.
It is.
So you get a lot of tourists through here, obviously.
Yes.
Just seeing a bus actually pull out now. What is this? This is a display of all these carvings. Describe to us or explain to us what the carvings are all about.
They're a memorial for the fallen soldiers.
Right.
From World War One.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from the local area. They enrolled here and...
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a memorial. They was going to condemn, the trees were condemned. The trees were planted in 1918 for the soldiers.
Right.
For each soldier that was got killed at the war.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many trees, how many soldiers were killed?
Well, there's actually seven.
Seven trees?
Seven trees.
So there's seven carvings.
Yep.
And there's some quite large carvings and there are also some individual carvings. So each carving obviously means something. I haven't gone down there to look at the signs. But so what are they depicting? For example, there's a very large one over there that looks like there's a lady in waiting and there's husbands and wives, I'm assuming, kissing each other.
And nurses.
Nurses
from the war, yes, okay. Different ones, yeah.
So they're all the people that served?
All served.
Lost their life?
Not all of them lost their life, but the men did.
The men did,
but the ladies, they served as nurses.
Yeah. And so on and so forth. So what about all the timber? Now, is there? You said that was a timber town?
Yes.
Is the timber still going or no?
There's very few sawmills now. There used to be one there, but there's pictures of them on the wall. There was about five sawmills just in this little area.
Okay.
Around here, and there's one just over there. And
so it's mainly now just the milk?
Yep. No milk now either. The milk factory's closed as well.
Wow. So,
yeah.
So what is there here other than the statues and
farming?
Farming.
Farming. Yeah, cropping, and they still milk, but they cart the milk to Devonport now and Wynyard and different places. Yeah.
So the 150 people who live here, they're all retirees, I guess, by the sound of that.
Yeah, but a lot of them work around the farms.
Okay.
Because
it is a small town and there's obviously not much industry, so it's just that.
That's right.
So what would a person expect to see? Is this pretty much it where we are now with the carvings, or are there some other things immediately in the area that tourists might like to look at?
Yes, they go just in the Ringarooma and Ledgerwood area. There's mainly only the carvings and that here, and there's up at Ringarooma there's a history centre up there in the old church.
Okay.
Then they travel a bit further just up in the hills to look at the waterfall,
right?
Rouse Falls, and
okay,
that sort of thing. Yes.
So you get a lot of tourists come through
quite
this little town.
Yes.
Okay.
Get a terrible, real lot here at the.
So what about your bus tour? We just saw a loaded bus. Do you get many of those come through each day, or just once a day?
There was two today.
Yeah.
There was one just before that one.
Okay.
Probably get three or four a week.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
So there's a lot of people coming through to look at the place.
There is. Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I've got to tell you, the carvings are brilliant. Who's responsible for those carvings?
Eddie Freeman.
Okay, and how did he cut them? Did he use...
Chainsaws.
Just chainsaws?
Yeah, different size chainsaws he uses, from large ones down to small, and then he just finishes them off with just the normal chisels and different things like that,
So how long would it take him? Like that one there that's got the entire family it's a huge tree.
Yes.
And the carvings. How long would it take him to carve something like that when he did that?
Well, it took him 2 years for the whole lot, just on and off, you know, bad weather and that sort of thing. He didn't work in it, but yeah.
That's incredible. And have the trees or the carvings been treated in any way so that they don't obviously rot and fall down?
Yeah, they've been treated with a special staff, and they every 12 months they're treated and varnished with a special wood varnish.
Right.
Yeah.
To preserve them.
To preserve them. It's not preserving them very well, but
okay.
Just got to hope that we find some form of.
So how long have they actually been standing, the carvings?
Since they've been carved, yes. 2006 they were finished.
2006?
Yes.
So they've been here for, 18 years? Is that right? 2000, yeah. So, and they look very well preserved for me, so I'm imagining they're going to stand here for a long time.
They should be up here, yeah. The only trouble is when they start to rot trees, they get pethy.
Yes.
And they start drawing water up from the bottom, you see.
Okay.
Yeah, like that, like a sponge. You know, that pethy woods like that's, yeah.
So I'm, hopefully they're going to be here for a long time. All right, well, we're going to wind this up, John.
Yes.
Now, before we do this, I've got to ask you, have you got a favourite Australian singer or band?
AC/DC.
AC/DC, John. I love your taste in music. I tell you what, and so are the listeners.
And a lot of songs, but I can't remember songs. I'm terrible for names.
I wouldn't have picked you as an AC/DC fan. Oh, well, there's a lot. There's Highway to Hell. There's
Jailbreak.
Highway to Hell.
All of those. Yeah, Highway to Hell.
All right. Well, we're going to put Highway to Hell on.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time today, John. John is a volunteer at the Ledgerwood Memorial Park. Mate, thank you so much
for
your time.
Yes.
We'll be back with more Roman Oz listeners straight after AC/DC's Highway to Hell. We'll be right back. Oh, hello, listeners. My name is Phil C, and this is Roaming Oz. And today we are chatting with Malcolm Drinkwater. So it is History Hill here in Hill End.
That's it.
And it's a museum and mine.
The underground mine, yeah, I do admit is a replica, but there's a story to that as well.
Okay.
I built a mine for tourism. Took me 5 years.
Right.
About 5 years later, the national parks went, oh, we should have that.
Okay.
The short story is the ombudsman dismissed the senior ranger, so the national parks have never liked me. they've got a little bit of a set on me. But because I could have involved the council said, what can we do? I said, you can sign development consent for another mine.
Okay.
So Hill End's got two tourist mines.
Right.
I built both. This one goes in 135 metres.
Right.
It only took me 3 years to build. It's called pissarophery. If there isn't a word like that, there should be. And at the finish, you can climb 18 metres, seven ladders out to the surface. So
okay.
Both mines will look identical.
Okay.
But you don't do it second best, second time, second rate.
Uh-huh.
So I made this one bigger.
Fabulous.
And
it's called pissarophery.
Yeah, well, actually, there's a little bit of... tongue-in-cheek with the name of the mine, because every mine has to have a name.
Yep.
And I thought the world's largest single mass of gold came from the Star of Hope mine.
Right.
So we named this one the Son of Hope mine. Most people, well, I won't say most, everyone seems to enjoy going through it. We made it as real as possible.
Okay. Now, it's the largest privately owned collection in Australia here, is that correct?
That is what I'm told by the museum fanatics.
Okay.
I don't get out very much. That's why the place is so big.
Right.
I've had people here say they've travelled worldwide and they've never seen so much on one site. And you'll get a view of that directly. But there's over 100 sets of gold scales, over 500 Chinese pieces. There's a firearms collection. There is over 10,000 pieces, because my belief was if it was on the land of a gold field during the time of a gold rush, it had provenance. Some people have said, oh, there wasn't much on gold. I said, but without gold, none of this would have existed.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people ask the obvious question, how much is it from Hill End? We don't know. The gold digger was a traveller.
Mm-hmm.
There's one journalist who said he went to Gulgong.
Right.
To study. He was sent there to cover the gold rush. He said, when I got there, overnight the town had become deserted as all the diggers had rushed to Hill End.
Okay.
Well, they're bound to take their picks and shovels and bits and pieces with them. They may have left them here.
Right.
So really, when we find something here, it might be from Gulgong.
Right.
And you find something at Ballarat, which is where a lot went to from here, it might be from Hill End.
Okay.
I believe that if it was pre-1900 gold fields, it could be from Hill End or anywhere.
Okay.
In fact, some of the things that I have actually purchased that were definitively Hill End came from hundreds of kilometres away. They've ended up there.
Right. Yeah. So what about the Ballarat gold rush? How would that compare to what was going on here?
Oh, we're just lucky that the New South Wales-Victorian border is where it is. Total of gold from Hill End estimated 65 tonnes, for Ballarat estimated 630 tonnes. So 10 times more, but we had four world records. That takes it out. And I've put those in the documentaries.
Yes.
One is Gold and B.O. Halterman. The idea with that is to explain exactly what gold is, how it occurs, so you can understand the process that mining follows, and then you can find the relics and tie them back into the process and to the finding of gold. We finish with about a 12 or 15 minute section on Halterman, because he's most associated with the world's biggest bit of gold, and there's so many stories out of how it was found. The great-great-grandfather syndrome,
mm-hmm.
because we love to idolise our grandparents. But they're human and not always telling the truth. I've had people come in here and say, mate, my great-grandfather actually found that behind a bush. And he yelled out, hey, fellas, come and have a look at this. I said, what did he say? Oh, yeah, mate, it's a family history. Hey, fellas, come and have a look at this. Well, I've got the official mine records, the day books kept by the mine. So
yes.
I'm pretty sure my story
is correct.
But there's a lot of books out there on Halterman that are incorrect. So let's make one thing very, very clear. I was passionate to find the truth. If other books had written the correct story, I would never, ever have published documentaries or books.
Okay.
It's only because I came up with other stories. I mean, all the common books talked about a bloke by the name of Mark Hammond, who blewed with Halterman in 1872, left the mine, the two fought, never met up again. No, I've got Halterman's 1874 diary, where he talks in Sydney about, oh, Mark dropped in today, haven't seen him for a while, we had a great yarn. Halterman then supposedly never ever mined for gold after Hill End. Sorry, if you go through the mines inspection reports and the records of claims, he and Mark Hammond jointly applied for a mining claim near Queanbeyan at Captain's Flat just before he died. It was granted only after his death. Okay. So I don't think they were enemies, and he did continue in mining.
Okay.
Just that all the books said no, no, no. And I thought, well, how can you get so much wrong? And they did. So 100,000 K-word book, over 40 years association with the Halterman family, a lot of his diaries and personal work, and bingo, museum, books, documentary.
So that was the big passion for you for writing these books, to find out the truth and really what... Yeah, because you said it was incorrect information. So what drove you to want to find the truth?
If you're finding... If you're an explorer and you're coming across wonderful new things...
Right.
You want to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're coming across old stuff that everyone else knows, you get disheartened. The more I explored, the more I became curious, the more I thought, hang on, this isn't right. That's not right. That's not right. I wonder what else is wrong. I'm going to give you a little example of right. how difficult the research is. Very famous photograph of Hill End has Jenkins Blacksmith's shop. It's on those plaques around the town. Right-hand side, it's got Halterman.
Right.
And you look at it for 30 years and you go, doesn't fit Halterman. Halterman was always dressed to the nines. He never slouched. What's this person doing slouching? He's not with the blacksmiths. He's to one side. He looks a little bit awkward. Halterman had an elder brother, Herman. Halterman was sent out to Australia to look for Herman, right? Well, Halterman also said he worked as a butcher when things got tight. And behind Jenkins' blacksmith shop, I found an unidentified butcher's shop. And then I thought, well, okay, what if Herman was a butcher and Halterman actually worked for him in this unidentified? And what if... it's Herman who's come around the side of the building to be part of the photograph.
Ah, photobombing.
So I looked into Herman's eyes, totally different to Halterman's eyes, and I thought, that has to be Herman. None of the family, Mitchell, no one knew that he was a butcher. No, 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 it doesn't happen. I went through births. Hang on, they're wrong there too. It's actually his younger brother. Now, this is a total, off the beaten track scenario.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of butchers were thieves.
Okay.
Or they associated with thieves because you got rid of the evidence. I mean, you had to have a market if you were Ned Kelly or Ben Hall. Had to have a market. And you couldn't legally sell it because you'd be caught. Okay. So you sold it on the side to butchers. They got rid of the evidence and they made a profit. And I thought, I wonder if Herman had a dark side and they got him out of Germany earlier, and then when Halterman became of age, sent him out looking for him. That was one of my theories, and I thought that would explain the butcher bit, but no butcher, no butcher, no butcher. So eventually, now you've got to remember, Halterman died in 1885. The specimen of fuss was in 1872. Most of everything had gone by late 1873. And I'll give you the date. It's 1893.
Okay.
Halterman's youngest sister has come out to Australia, Sophia Halterman, which is a bit troubling because Halterman named his eldest daughter Sophia Halterman. So there's two Sophia Haltermans, which the books all get confused. It's only a few years between them. I got hold of Sophia's naturalisation papers. I read every word until I came across a detective in Sydney who decided to do a character profile on her, and she says in it, I am living with my brother Herman, a butcher.
Okay.
So that's just how many years it took me. But of course, once you find something like that, the history vultures are sitting on the fence.
Yeah.
They run in, grab it, they get onto people like you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go to meetings. I don't throw myself out there. I just find I've got to try and be productive. Now, in being productive, I'm allowing other people to come in and white ant all the wonderful information that I come across. It's taken me a lot of money, time, years, whatever, to come across. But that's just one little example of trying to get it right and following that track where you've got a hunch.
Yes.
You've just got that feeling. And that feeling has come to me a number of ways. Don Laird is my main Chinese expert. He's in his mid-90s in Melbourne. And he once told me, sometimes you just got to go with your gut feeling. And I found that's been the biggest hint, because once you grow up in the bush, being an underground miner, being a horseman, being a bushman, done all that stuff, you've got that database of subconscious knowledge that without realizing, when you're reading a document, that's feeding in and giving you those hunches to follow.
And hence that's why you wrote the two books.
Three.
You've written three.
Well, Hill and Hearsay, because by the time I got to 2010,
yes,
I realized all my mentors were passing away or had passed away, and the information they given was, you couldn't count the wonderful bits of information I'd got. And I thought, if I don't write it down, it'll be gone.
Exactly.
So I brought out a book called Hill End Hearsay.
Yes.
And in it, I documented the way things were, but in chapters.
Okay. Like the way things were in Hill End.
When I was a kid, which was caught in the past. Example. Hill End never had a cattle crush. I didn't know cattle crushes existed.
Right.
But we had the Hill End Common with cattle running on it. So it was literally like an 1800s American Hollywood Western. It was rope, throw, and hot iron brand of horseback.
Really? Wow, okay.
And I thought that's the way it was. And when my wife and I got together nearly 40 years ago, she said, well, we'll get cattle. I said, no. She said, why not? I said, they hurt me too much when I was younger. I said, after a day working cattle, I was bruised.
Yes.
Especially around the fingers with big horned bullocks, you know, that were throwing you around.
Yeah.
But I went to a field days once, and I thought it was really good because the wife had to hold me back.
Uh-huh.
There was this bloke there going, and this is the way you throw a bullock. None of you would know how to do that. And I thought, come on, I could have him on his back in 2 seconds, because there's a loose bit of skin around the flank. And if you reach over the bullock the right way and slap that, as you slap it, he'll lift his leg up, and you grab that loose bit of skin, twist the head back towards the skin and take one step back, and he falls over on his back. And it's again, it's practice. You couldn't send a novice in to do it.
No.
But I said to my wife, look, I'm sorry. I'm going to show him how to do this.
Okay.
No, keep out of it.
Okay.
So I've been to a few field days, and I've watched the so-called experts.
Okay.
And I've thought, haven't got a clue. You missed the boat. I was involved with second generation living in the past,
yes,
teaching me the way it was for them,
mm-hmm,
which was the way it wasn't. Half of them couldn't read or write,
mm-hmm,
so I fitted in really well.
So in the past, there were 50-odd hotels in Hill End, weren't there?
I was the first one to correctly do that at the State Archives in 1980.
Right.
I was the first one who went down and literally wrote down names, numbers, and rewrote the story of how and why the hotels came about. And it's in the YouTube channel. Like, the Royal Hotel was never built as the Royal Hotel in Hill End.
Okay.
But I can tell you a bit of gossip about it.
Right.
Because I used to do yard work for Donald Murray. And you're going to love this one. There were two Donald Murrays.
Mm-hmm.
Similar age. One was called Bushman Don and the other one Gentleman Don. Gentleman Don really wasn't Gentleman Don. He was Donald Friend's toy boy.
Okay.
And when Donald Friend, the artist, left here, Donald Murray, the toy boy, stayed in his house, and now I think about it, there could have been ulterior motives, but as an 18-year-old, Donald Murray would get me up there to cart his firewood, take away his garbage, and he'd always bring me in and shout me a beer at the end of the day for and pay me for doing the work and have a yarn. Some of the yarns were brilliant about Donald Friend.
Okay.
One was the sign on the Royal Hotel at Hill End was painted by Donald Friend in 1956 as a replica. And he put Queen Victoria on them, or Queen Elizabeth. We're not really sure which, because they're neither. He painted replicas or images of previous boyfriends, which were queens. Now, at one stage...
Is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
At one stage, there was the two Don Murrays living on the same track, we'll call it.
Right.
And sent through officially Australia Post, or then the PNG, was a parcel... officially addressed to Donald Murray, quote, in big brackets underneath, not poofed on. Now, that's being politically correct.
It is indeed.
And no offence was taken. No offence. It was just that was the way it was addressed.
We're just going to take a short break, Malcolm, because I don't want to... such fascinating information. I'm going to take a short break. I'm going to play Johnny Williamson's Hey True Blue, because you're a fantastic True Blue bloke, and we'll be back with more of you straight after that.
Hey True Blue, don't say you've gone. Say you've knocked off for a smoker, and you'll be back later on. Hey, true blue. Hey, true blue. Give it to me straight, face to face. Are you really disappearing? Just another dying race. Hey, true blue. True blue. Is it me and you? Is it mom and dad? Is it a cockatoo? Is it standing by your mate when he's in a fight? Or just Vegemite? True blue, I'm asking you. Hey, true blue, can you bear the load? Will you tie it up with wire just to keep the show on the road? Hey, true blue. Hey, true blue. Now be fair dinkum. Is your heart still there? If they sell us out like sponge cake, do you really care? Hey, true blue. True blue. Is it me and you? Is it mom and dad? Is it a cockatoo? Is it standing by your mate when she's in a fight? Or just Vegemite? True blue, I'm asking you. True blue, is it me and you? Is it mom and dad? Is it a cockatoo? Is it standing by your mate when he's in a fight? Or just there?
you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.